Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. At 525 111th Avenue North in Naples, Florida, sits the Naples Memorial Gardens. The souls of hundreds have been laid to eternal rest on its grounds. But in 2004, the location became the centerpiece of an investigation into the disappearance of someone who still lived and breathed when he was last seen there. Someone who was not even supposed to be there, and who, once he left the grounds, was never seen again. The investigation into this disappearance from the Naples Memorial Gardens fueled the fires of determination and the storms of grief for one family, and for another, stirred dormant suspicion and plunged them into the endless abyss of what if. Two families connected by tragedy, bound together in their pursuit of justice. This is the story of Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos. Terrence Williams was born on January 17, 1976, to his mother Marcia in Chattanooga, Tennessee. An only child, Terrence felt his mother's full devotion, and as he grew up, they shared an unbreakable bond. Terrence grew up in Chattanooga, and as a teenager, he became a father. He eventually went on to have three more children. While there was contention between Terrence and his partner, he loved his children and wanted to be as involved in their lives as he could. Unfortunately, Terrence did find himself in some legal trouble regarding child support, and he did end up with an arrest record. In 2002, Terrence's mother Marcia got married, and soon thereafter, she and her new husband made the big move from Chattanooga, Tennessee to Naples, Florida, and Terrence decided to make the move with them. With his children living in Tennessee with their mother, the move was difficult for Terrence. But he saw it as an opportunity to get on his feet and build a life that he could eventually share with his children. His ultimate goal was to be comfortable enough that his children could live with him. After moving to Naples, Terrence was able to find work in construction, and he also landed a second job, working as a cook at Pizza Hut. Terrence's mother, Marcia, worked at a bank, and it was at that bank that Terrence met his roommate, Jason. Jason was a co-worker of Marcia's, and he and Terrence hit it off pretty quickly. The two men ended up renting a house together and becoming close friends. Although Terrence was a relatively quiet, laid-back person, he enjoyed going out most weekends with Jason. On the evening of January 11, 2004, Marcia picked Terrence up from work and dropped him off at home so he could change his clothes. That night, he had been invited to a party with some of his Pizza Hut co-workers. Before leaving, Terrence invited Jason to come along to the party. Jason declined, however, because his children were visiting him, and he had a personal rule that he didn't go out and party when he had his children. What Jason could never have guessed was that watching Terrence walk out of the front door of their home that night would be the last time he ever saw him. Terrence drove off in his white 1983 Cadillac to head to the party. He was nervous about it, however, as he was driving without proper registration and without a license. His license had been suspended when he still lived in Tennessee after he had been arrested for driving under the influence. He was due to get his license back in June 2004. But without Jason to provide transportation, that night Terrence decided to take the risk and drive himself to the party. Shortly after Terrence left the house, he called Jason from a payphone, telling him that there were a lot of cops out and about, so he'd pulled over for a bit. He was nervous about getting caught driving without a license. After talking for a few minutes, Terrence hung up with Jason and headed to the party with his coworkers. The next morning, Jason woke up to find that he had a few missed calls from a number he didn't recognize. He also noticed that Terrence hadn't returned home. Jason called the number back, and it turned out to be one of Terrence's coworkers. The coworker told Jason that Terrence had left the party alone between 5 and 6 a.m. that morning. Initially, Jason wasn't alarmed by Terrence's absence. He assumed that Terrence had just crashed at another friend's place after leaving the party. In fact, according to Jason, Terrence had a personal rule. He always told Jason that if he were gone for 2 days, not to worry and that he was probably just staying with a friend. But Terrence warned Jason that if he still had not returned after 3 days, start looking for him. By January 13th, Marcia and Jason were communicating and realizing that neither of them had heard from Terrence in almost 2 full days. Even though Terrence was 27 years old, this was not normal for him. He talked with his mother daily, and he relied on both her and Jason to get him from place to place because he didn't have his license. Taking his Cadillac out on the night of the party was a risk, and not something he normally did. Roommate Jason started calling around, hoping to locate Terrence. He called hospitals, wondering if Terrence had been in an accident. He called jails, thinking Terrence could have been arrested for driving without his license. But Terrence was nowhere to be found. The next day, January 14th, Marcia went to the Pizza Hut where Terrence worked and learned that he hadn't shown up to work in 3 days. He had also failed to pick up his last 2 paychecks. By January 15th, Terrence had been missing for almost 4 full days. Marcia enlisted the help of some of her family members back in Tennessee to aid her in the search for her son. They continued calling around to hospitals, jails, and Naples police, hoping for any leads as to Terrence's whereabouts. In the midst of their search, Marcia attempted to report Terrence missing to the Collier County Sheriff's Office, but she was completely written off. She was told that Terrence was an adult and that he could leave if he wanted to. Officers told her to come back if she hadn't heard from Terrence in a month. Terrence's family started calling tow companies, and finally, they got a lead. They learned that Terrence's car had been towed from the Naples Memorial Gardens on January 12, 2004, and that the tow was requested by a Collier County Sheriff's deputy named Steve Calkins. Now that they had an idea of what happened with Terrence, his family called the Collier County Sheriff's Office again to find out when Terrence was taken into custody and where he was located. But according to the Sheriff's Office, there were no incident or arrest reports filed in connection with Terrence Williams. So if a deputy had Terrence's car towed, where was Terrence when the deputy found his car? Becoming increasingly concerned and frustrated with the lack of support or aid from local authorities, Marcia took it upon herself to launch an investigation into her son's disappearance. Knowing that Terrence's car was towed from the Naples Memorial Gardens, Marcia visited the location herself and found cemetery employees who had actually witnessed Terrence being pulled over on the morning of January 12, 2004. After hearing what the employees had to say, Marcia contacted a friend of hers who happened to be a notary. Marcia asked that the employees offer an official written statement about the events of January 12th so that it could be notarized and presented to the police. The written statement from one of the cemetery employees stated, quote, "On Monday, January 12th, approximately 9 a.m., a white, older model Cadillac was pulled over at Naples Memorial Garden by the Collier County Sheriff's Department. The deputy approached the vehicle and spoke with the driver. The driver got out of the car and I overheard the deputy ask for some sort of identification. Anything with a picture. The driver raised his hands in a way to signal that he had no ID. At that time, the deputy asked the driver to stand at the rear of the deputy's vehicle with his hands on the car. The deputy patted down the driver and then placed him in the back seat of the patrol car, driver's side. The deputy then went back to the white car, got in the driver's side, looked through the car for about 1 to 2 minutes. He then got out of the car and said to me, 'I'll be back. We'll get this car towed.'" End quote. The employee did not recall the deputy's name, but their statement matched the time frame and the location where the towing company was called out to tow Terrence's car. And, of course, the towing company's records indicated that Deputy Steve Calkins was the one who had pulled Terrence over and subsequently had his car towed. After confirming that Deputy Steve Calkins was the person who called to have Terrence's car towed, and after obtaining sworn, written statements from witnesses at the Memorial Gardens, Marcia returned to the Collier County Sheriff's Office with the evidence she had gathered. At that point, a dispatcher called Steve Calkins directly to ask about the incident with Terrence.
"I hate to bother you home on your day off, but this woman's been bothering us all day. You towed a car from Vanderbilt to 111th Monday, a Cadillac. You remember it?
No.
The people at the cemetery are telling her you put somebody in the back of your vehicle and arrested them, and I don't show you arresting anybody.
I don't arrest nobody.
Anyway, I was trying to figure out what color the Cadillac was. I forgot. I got it right in front of me. You could sit up at 1227 on Vanderbilt at 111th and Coastland came and got it. A large white Cadillac.
Large white Cadillac. I got to look it up in my notes. I don't remember. God almighty.
But you're sure you didn't? Are you sure there was no one with it?
No.
The same dispatcher then called Marcia's sister to update her about what she had found.
Hi, this is the sheriff's office. I talked to Deputy Calkins, and he did not pick anybody up with that vehicle.
He did not?
He did not.
People at the cemetery said that they saw a police officer in a Collier County Sheriff's Department car, put him in the car, and take him away.
Okay, if there was an officer out there, there's over 900 officers here. We'd have to have a car number to know who it was. There's no way I could find out if somebody gave him a ride somewhere.
When I called, they all said that the way you could track him would be the report at the street he was picked up on.
There was no report taken. That's what I'm telling you. There is no report taken from that area on Monday. No one picked him up. So whoever is telling you this is either giving you wrong information or it's not the same person.
As it turned out, Calkins had not written a report about pulling Terrence over, as was protocol. It wasn't until January 19th, 2004, 7 days after he had pulled Terrence over, placed him in the back of his cruiser, and had his car towed, that Steve Calkins wrote an official report about the incident, and he had only written that report under pressure from his superiors. Marcia was not giving up on her son, and the Collier County Sheriff's Office was feeling cornered. At the time of Terrence's disappearance, Deputy Steve Calkins was a 16-year veteran on the force. He had always received positive evaluations, and even once received a commendation and local notoriety for rescuing a person who was pinned underneath a truck in an accident. But something about Deputy Calkins' story did not sit right with Marcia. Something about Deputy Calkins himself did not sit right. In Calkins' official report, he stated that he pulled Terrence over sometime after 12 p.m. on the afternoon of January 12, 2004. Workers at the cemetery recalled seeing Calkins pull Terrence over around 9 a.m. that morning. That leaves a 3-hour discrepancy between the witness statement and Deputy Calkins' statement. In the report, Calkins explained that he observed an older model white Cadillac traveling southbound on County Road 901. He noted that the vehicle appeared to be having problems, so he motioned for the driver, who was Terrence Williams, to pull over. After he pulled the driver over at the cemetery, he asked the driver if he was having car trouble, to which the driver said yes. According to Calkins, the driver explained that he had just purchased the car and that it was not running correctly. So the driver then asked Calkins if he could give him a ride to work because he was now running late. Calkins offered to call a cab for the driver, but the driver said no, as he could not afford a cab ride. Calkins went on to state in his report that the driver asked to be dropped off at the Circle K on Wiggins Pass Road, and that that was exactly where Calkins took him and dropped him off. According to Calkins, when he dropped the driver off at the Circle K, the driver told him that his registration was in the glove box of his car. Calkins went on to say that after dropping the driver off at Circle K, he returned to Naples Memorial Gardens, where the car was still parked. When he checked the glove box, it was empty. Upon discovering this, Calkins stated that he called the Circle K and asked for Terrence, but the employee that answered the phone told him that she didn't know a Terrence that worked there. There was never any proof that Terrence ever arrived at the Circle K, or any Circle K in the area, nor was there ever any proof that Steve Calkins had driven him there. According to Marcia, there are several things about Calkins' statement that do not make sense. Number one, Marcia believes firmly that Terrence would never have asked a police officer for a ride anywhere, no matter the circumstances. Terrence was distrustful of and uncomfortable around cops. Marcia believes that, if anything, Terrence would have asked the officer to use his phone to call his mom for a ride. Number two, Terrence did not work at Circle K. He worked as a construction worker and at a local Pizza Hut. What reason would he have to make such a blatant lie to an officer? Number three, Terrence's vehicle was not registered. Therefore, he would not have had his registration in the glove box of his car. And even if he did, why would he wait to tell the officer about his registration instead of just handing the document over when he was initially pulled over? Number four, according to Marcia, when she picked up Terrence's car from the tow yard, the car was not having any mechanical troubles whatsoever. And number five, there were justifiable reasons for Terrence to have been arrested, or at the very least, cited, when Calkins pulled him over. He had no identification or vehicle registration, not to mention, he didn't have a license at all. It was still suspended. But strangely, Calkins did not arrest or even cite Terrence for anything. Instead, Calkins apparently took a casual approach to the incident. So casual, in fact, that he did not even bother to write an initial report when the incident happened, leaving no record of it happening at all until he was pressured by his superiors. When Calkins decided to have the car towed, he did report back to dispatch that he was having a white Cadillac towed away from Naples Memorial Gardens. The first thing you may have noticed about this call is the glaring racism. Calkins and the dispatcher he was speaking to were later investigated for this call. But that investigation only found that during the call, Calkins had been unprofessional and that he didn't actually show any internal racial bias. You may have also noticed that in that call, Calkins said, quote, "Who knows? Maybe he's out in the cemetery and he's going to come back and see that his Cadillac is gone," end quote, before he starts laughing. According to his later report, Calkins had driven Terrence to the Circle K, just up the road before returning to the cemetery to make this phone call. Why would he suggest that the owner of the car, quote-unquote, might be out in the cemetery, if he knew that he himself had just driven the owner of the car away to a different location? In my opinion, that phone call alone indicates that Calkins never intended to write a report about the incident. It seemed that his original intent was to act as if he simply found an abandoned vehicle obstructing traffic and decided to have it towed away because he couldn't locate the owner. He never intended to tell the truth about his interaction with Terrence. He wanted people, specifically his coworkers, to believe that he had never encountered Terrence at all. Why would that be? In March 2004, 2 months after Terrence disappeared, Marcia wrote a letter to the editor of the Naples Daily News, hoping to get more eyes on her son's case. Part of the article about Terrence read, quote, "Please help me find my son, Terrence Williams. On January 12th, my son was driving to Naples from Bonita Springs. According to eyewitnesses, at approximately 9 a.m., he was pulled over by a Collier County Sheriff's deputy at 111th Avenue North and Vanderbilt Drive. Terrence parked his vehicle on the cemetery grounds. He did not possess a valid driver's license, registration, or insurance documents. Corporal Stephen Calkins searched him and put him in the back of his vehicle and drove him somewhere. He has not been seen or heard from since. The officer stated he drove him to the Circle K that is located on US 41 and Wiggins Pass Road. The deputy came back to the cemetery and stated the vehicle might be stolen and had it towed. The sheriff's office is conducting an internal investigation and will not release any information until it is completed," end quote. After the article about Terrence was published in the newspaper, Marcia received a phone call from the Mexican consulate. Initially, she believed that she was receiving the phone call because Terrence had been located in Mexico. But this phone call would send the investigation into the disappearance of Terrence Williams into an entirely twisted new direction. The caller informed Marcia that a man named Felipe Santos disappeared in October 2003, 3 months before Terrence disappeared. But the disappearance of the two men shared one critical detail. Both men were last seen in Steve Calkins' patrol car.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Felipe Santos had immigrated to the United States from Oaxaca, Mexico. He and his two brothers, Salvador and Jorge, were all undocumented. They had come to the United States to make a better living and to be able to send money back home to their family. By October 2003, quiet and polite Felipe was 23 years old and engaged. He and his fiancée had an infant daughter. On the morning of October 14, 2003, Felipe, along with his two brothers Salvador and Jorge, were driving to work in their 1988 white Ford Tempo, with Felipe behind the wheel. All three men were concrete workers for a local construction company. Just before 7 a.m., as the brothers were driving along Immokalee Road, they were involved in a minor traffic accident. Felipe offered to pay the other driver so as to avoid calling the police. Again, all three men were undocumented. But the woman insisted that she wanted a record of the accident, so she called police to the scene. At 6:55 a.m. on October 14, 2003, Deputy Steve Calkins arrived on the scene. Not only were the brothers undocumented, but Felipe was driving the vehicle without a license or insurance. Felipe, his brothers, the other driver, and Deputy Steve Calkins all pulled into a nearby gas station, a mobile station in the Green Tree Shopping Center, so that Calkins could take statements and write a report. In the meantime, Felipe and his brothers were able to get a hold of their boss, who was on his way to the gas station to pick them up and take them to work. According to Salvador, Deputy Calkins' demeanor during the entire encounter was angry and impatient. Calkins put Felipe into his patrol car, and Salvador and Jorge assumed they would be able to simply pay the bail and get their brother out later. But that is not at all what happened. Calkins then left with Felipe, leaving Salvador and Jorge waiting at the gas station for their boss to pick them up. Later that day, the brothers went to the Collier County Jail, ready to pay the bail and pick up their brother. But Felipe was not there. The brothers' boss soon started calling around, trying to locate Felipe. But there was no record of Felipe being brought to any jail in the area. They called hospitals and even contacted immigration authorities. But there was no record of Felipe being admitted to a hospital or being arrested for his immigration status. He was gone. After days with no luck in locating their brother, Salvador and Jorge contacted the Mexican consulate, asking for assistance in filing a missing person report for Felipe. On October 29, 2003, the brothers filed a formal complaint against Deputy Steve Calkins. On November 4, 2003, Calkins was questioned by the Sheriff's Department's internal affairs personnel. In the interview, Calkins stated that he arrived on the scene and asked who the driver of the white Ford Tempo was. Felipe stepped forward, presented an ID card, but told Calkins that he did not have a driver's license or insurance. Calkins ran the license plate and found that the car was registered under Felipe's name. When Felipe told Calkins that he had no license or insurance, Calkins stated that he placed Felipe under arrest and put him in the back seat of his patrol car. Calkins finished his report on the accident, confiscated the keys to Felipe's car, and then left with Felipe. According to Calkins, he decided not to take Felipe to jail because he was, quote, being very polite and cooperative, end quote. Instead, he drove him to the Circle K at Immokalee Road and Winterview Drive. And here, we see the similarities between Felipe and Terrence's disappearances starting to get eerie. Calkins stated that he took Felipe to the Circle K instead of leaving him with his brothers because he was, quote, afraid that he was going to drive off, end quote. Calkins stated that when they arrived at Circle K, he talked with Felipe and issued him 3 citations. He got back in his patrol car and left, stating that he last saw Felipe walking toward the payphones at the Circle K. There was no proof that Felipe ever arrived at the Circle K or any Circle K in the area. Nor was there ever any proof that Steve Calkins had driven him there. Now, the thing about those 3 citations is that Felipe's middle name is signed incorrectly. One of the signatures clearly reads Medino, and the other 2 signatures read Maximo. Felipe's middle name is Maximino. If he had signed the citations himself, it's unlikely that he would have spelled his own middle name incorrectly 3 different times. Not only that, but when compared to Felipe's signature from an old school ID, the signature on the ID did not match the signatures on the traffic citations. The signatures were later also compared to Steve Calkins' handwriting, but it was allegedly determined that the signatures did not match Calkins' handwriting either. And if these citations were issued to Felipe at the Circle K gas station, that means that his brothers were not present and also could not have signed the citations. So, who then signed Felipe's name incorrectly 3 different times? In an article published to CNN by Thomas Lake and released in 2023, 20 years after Felipe's disappearance, journalists detailed Calkins' movements after he allegedly dropped Felipe off at the Circle K. At 7:35 a.m., on October 14, 2003, Calkins reported to dispatch that he had cleared the crash call, meaning that he was leaving the scene. According to Calkins, he then went to a briefing at the sheriff's substation. But there are no records to indicate whether anyone physically saw Calkins at that briefing that morning, nor is there any other proof that he was there. Calkins' call to dispatch that he had cleared the crash scene showed a clear timeline discrepancy. According to the woman who was involved in the minor accident with Felipe's car, she recalled Calkins leaving the scene just after 7 a.m., and one of Felipe's brothers corroborated that statement. Yet Calkins reported to dispatch that he left the scene much later, at 7:35 a.m. At 7:59 a.m., Calkins reported to dispatch that he was conducting an extra patrol near Naples Park Elementary School, and he called into dispatch again to state that he was ending that patrol at 8:19 a.m. At 8:53 a.m., Calkins reported to dispatch that he was at North Collier Hospital to take a report regarding an underage girl giving birth. Investigators later stated that it was likely that Calkins truly was at the hospital taking that report. It should be noted that there was no location data to corroborate Calkins' reports to dispatch, meaning that between 7:05 a.m. and 8:53 a.m. on October 14, 2003, Calkins' whereabouts could not be confirmed. Ultimately, in late 2003, Internal Affairs deemed that there was no wrongdoing on the part of Deputy Steve Calkins in the case of Felipe Santos, citing his actions as, quote-unquote, lawful and proper. Fast forward to January 2004, when Terrence Williams disappeared after being put in the back seat of Deputy Steve Calkins' patrol car. We're back in the middle of Marcia's investigation into her son's disappearance and her growing suspicions of Steve Calkins. On February 11, 2004, 1 month after Terrence disappeared, Calkins was interviewed by superiors at the Collier County Sheriff's Office. At this point, Marcia had contacted the sheriff's office regarding the disappearance of Felipe Santos and the disturbing similarities between Felipe and Terrence's cases. Calkins' superiors had started growing concerned, and it seemed that the seeds of suspicion had been planted in their minds as well.
It's a taped sworn statement taking place. Then will be the taped sworn statement of subject member Corporal Steve Calkins.
On January 12, 2004, at approximately 12:15 hours, I think, while on patrol, this officer observed an older model white Cadillac southbound on County Road 901. I further noticed that the vehicle appeared to be having some problems, and I just motioned for the driver to pull over. And the driver pulled into the parking lot of the
Why did you decide not to arrest him or not to cite him?
I didn't pull him over, sir. I didn't pull him over. I had no plans of arresting him for anything. I thought I was checking out with a disabled vehicle. I suppose if I hadn't been trying, I could have hooked him up with two or three citations. But that's not what I was wanting to do in the first place.
During the interview, Calkins stated that after dropping Terrence off at the Circle K, and after the towing company picked up Terrence's car, he tried calling the Circle K with his agency phone because he wanted to speak with Terrence. The sergeant conducting the interview then informed Calkins that his phone records were pulled, and there was no record of any call made to the Circle K from his phone. Calkins previously made this same exact claim in his official written report for the incident with Terrence, written on January 19th, 1 week after Terrence disappeared. Calkins then claimed during the interview that he actually drove back to the Circle K to try to speak with Terrence in person, but that Terrence was not there. Strange that Calkins would be so determined to locate and speak to Terrence after he allegedly let him go without so much as a citation. If Terrence was not in any trouble, what did Calkins so urgently need to speak with him about? On July 2nd, 2004, nearly 6 months after Terrence Williams disappeared, the Collier County Sheriff's Office released a statement. Quote, "Professional Responsibility Bureau inquiries are being conducted to determine whether Corporal Calkins violated any policies or procedures relative to his contacts with Mr. Santos and Mr. Williams," end quote. The statement continued with, quote, "Corporal Calkins has been placed on administrative duty based upon health considerations not directly related to this issue and is therefore not acting in any type of enforcement capacity," end quote. Then, the real shocker of this statement. Quote, "While the missing person status of Messrs. Williams and Santos presents as a coincidence in the extreme, we are reminded that many persons intentionally avoid law enforcement contacts. It is known that both men were wanted by law enforcement either at the moment of agency contact or immediately thereafter, and that their status was problematic for law enforcement purposes. These men may therefore be purposely avoiding being found by law enforcement," end quote. Essentially, the sheriff's office stated publicly that two men who disappeared 3 months apart from one another were last seen in the back seat of a patrol car driven by Steve Calkins, but that all of that is merely a coincidence and that both men are likely running from the law. Despite the fact that one of those men, according to Steve Calkins, was not in any trouble at all. As far as Felipe Santos, we know that he was undocumented, along with his two brothers, who were also present during Felipe's initial encounter with Steve Calkins. But again, according to Calkins himself, he simply issued Felipe three citations and let him be on his way, choosing not to get Felipe into any further trouble. So again, why would Felipe go on the run? Why would he abandon his fiancée and infant daughter when he was allegedly let off with citations and a warning? There was no reason for either of these men to become fugitives, and for the Collier County Sheriff's Office to publicly state otherwise was completely egregious. This was a clear attempt to use the citizenship status of an undocumented Mexican man and the personal legal troubles of a black man to save face and cover up the poor investigation and the burgeoning suspicions against a corrupt officer. Soon after the Collier County Sheriff's Office released that statement, Steve Calkins was given a polygraph examination, the results of which showed signs of deception. Calkins ultimately did end up taking two more polygraphs, one of which was inconclusive, and another showed no signs of deception. In August 2004, Steve Calkins was fired from the sheriff's office. The sheriff at the time stated that Calkins was fired because he was not being cooperative, thus making the agency unable to get the information they needed regarding their investigation. In other words, Calkins was lying and they knew it, but they could not find enough holes in his lies to navigate their way to the truth. In January 2016, 12 years after the disappearances of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams, Steve Calkins sold his home in Naples, Florida, and moved out of state. The new owners of Calkins' home in Naples allowed law enforcement to search the property. They were looking for human remains. They went so far as to dig up an area of concrete that Calkins had poured, but nothing was found on the property. In January 2018, Marcia was introduced to attorney Ben Crump, who later filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Steve Calkins in connection with the disappearances of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams. In December 2020, Steve Calkins was subpoenaed for a videotaped deposition to discuss his interactions with Felipe and Terrence, 17 years after they were last seen.
You're told you've been connected now with an individual who's gone missing.
Sorry.
You didn't write a report during the incident. You didn't call it in to tell me, I just thought I'd give him a quick page.
I think it's a pretty nice report.
Really? Okay. Pretty nice report, but it's not about being nice, is it? It's about providing as much information as possible that may help them, a mother, locate a missing child, correct? 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 You don't want to answer that, do you?
I'm sorry, I was just reading.
All right, go ahead and read the report.
Yeah, why are you pushing me so hard?
Because there's a mother who wants to know her child.
Well, I understand. It's also 17 years later. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
Okay, go ahead and read.
You pushing me 17 years later, I'm sorry. Yelling at me, screaming at me, pushing me is not going to help a whole lot, sir. I'm trying to remember as much as I can here. And I'm trying to help as much as I can.
Unfortunately, the wrongful death lawsuit did not move forward. Today, more than two decades after the disappearances of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams, no trace of either man has ever been found. It cannot be disregarded that Steve Calkins is a white man who was the last known person to see a Latino man and a black man alive. Steve Calkins was a white police officer who, on two separate occasions, put men of color into his patrol car after traffic violations and drove away with them. And yet, neither of those two men ever showed up at a jail. One man was working to save money and provide a better life for both his family back in Mexico, as well as his fiance and infant daughter, who lived with him in the United States. The other man was a father of four, trying to rebuild his life to be able to better provide for his children. Both of these men experienced what should have been ordinary traffic incidents. Instead, they were never seen again. In a recording made public in The Whole Story with Anderson Cooper, Season 2, Episode 6, Steve Calkins says, quote, "I'm not going to get dragged through the mud because a couple of scumbags are missing," end quote. And I think that tells us exactly what Steve Calkins thought of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams. Two families have been waiting for answers for more than two decades. Five children have grown up without their fathers. This was not a coincidence. This was not one deputy's bad luck. Something horrific happened to these men. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Felipe Santos on October 14, 2003 in Naples, Florida, or the disappearance of Terrence Williams on January 12, 2004 in Naples, Florida, please call the Collier County Sheriff's Office at 239-252-9300 or call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-780-8477. If you'd like to request a case to be covered on the show, you'll find a link to a case request form in the show notes. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, where you'll find full episodes complete with photos relevant to each case. You can follow the podcast on X, formerly Twitter, at Crime Again Pod, on Instagram at Crime Again Podcast, and on TikTok at Crime Again Podcast. Links to all social media can be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.